Well, good afternoon. I'm Leanne Stiles, and this is Catherine Pratt. And if you're here to learn about romance, you're in the right place. No. The title of our seminar is Sounds Romantic, but what do you really do on the field? So Catherine and I, we have some introductory comments and answers to some questions that we're typically asked. So we want to go through those, and hopefully we'll have time for some question and answer at the end. But I did want to kind of tell you the main topics that we're going to cover. We're going to do our introductions first and tell you some personal stories about how we got in the mission field. Then we're going to talk about the goal of missions, preparing to go, getting started in a new culture, and then various life situations that you might find yourself in, like being single, going as a married couple, going as a family, those different kinds of life stages. And then, like I say, question and answer at the end. So I'm going to let Catherine start off with her intro.
All right. I know that you've been told to squeeze in, but I just want to make that announcement again. There's a couple of empty seats I see down here. So you want to be sure that there are seats available as people come in. We appreciate it. So my name is Catherine Pratt. Zane is my husband. And we have two wonderful adult grown children, Charlotte, who's married to Ryan Spencer, and they live in Arlington, Virginia. And our son, Greg, lives here in Louisville. He's taking classes at Southern Seminary. We served with the International Mission Board for 23 years. Most of that time was in Central Asia. So I don't know if you're familiar with that kind of terminology, but Central Asia, the easiest way that I explain it to people, it's all of those countries that end in Stan. So Stan just means the land of. So you have Uzbekistan, which is the land of the Uzbeks, etc. So our first job assignment was as a strategy coordinator for to get the gospel to the Tajik people. It was back in 92 when we went to the field, and that was a brand new concept of trying to get to places that had no access to the gospel. There were no evangelical churches, or it was certainly less than 0.2% Christian. It was very unreached. So that was our job. And so we lived in Uzbekistan for a while, working with Tajiks. We lived in Pakistan. We went back to Uzbekistan. We lived in England for a while, supervising the work in Central Asia. And then we moved the office to Turkey. So then we were there for the longest. That was actually the longest place that Zane has ever lived. He's moved around a lot as a child. So we were 7 years in Turkey, and that felt like a lifetime for him. It was a great place. Every place that we went was different, but it was just what we needed at the time, and I learned so much about all those different cultures. The very last country that we lived in was Malaysia, and in the city of Kuala Lumpur, it had three distinct communities. It had Chinese, Tamil Indian, and the Malay, the local Malay, Muslim Malay. And I kept thinking, oh, this is great that I have a chance to learn about a whole different culture, different ethnic groups that I hadn't had over the 22 years prior to that. So during that time, Zane was doing mostly administration work. I mean, church planning and working with football teams and running a business and things like that. But what I did was a little different. I was a language learner primarily at first. I became a mother while we were on the field. I ran a guest house for a while. I was prayer advocate for our region. There's all sorts of different things that we ended up doing on the field. And you might, I'm just saying that because the title is, what do you really do? So I'm going to give you some more examples, but I just wanted to go ahead and throw that out. Nothing ever seems to stay the same. Things always change. New needs arise, need for different skill sets come up, and there's always, you have to be flexible. You just never know what's going to happen. So how did I become interested in missions is a question that we want to address. I always say that it's a process for me of really good mentorship and discipleship. I became a follower of Christ through the ministry of Young Life while I was in high school. That was initially brand new believer, all of the basic discipleship things that you have to learn that I was taught during those high years. Got involved with InterVarsity when I was in college and was challenged to share my faith on campus, to be discipled by somebody, to learn how to disciple somebody. I was a small group leader. And during that time, I learned about missions for the very first time. So I was in college. I didn't grow up in a church that was mission-oriented. Never met a missionary. Had never heard missionary stories, at least none that I can remember. So there was one of the large group meetings at InterVarsity. They said, oh, in a couple of months, we're going to have a weekend retreat where you can meet a real-life missionary. And it was almost as if God was tapping me on my shoulder and was like, pay attention, Catherine. I have something brand new, but it was like the next step. This is what I need to learn about. This is what this is part of understanding of who God is and what He does in the world, which is that He wants Christians. He wants the church to be globally, as we've heard several times in the different sessions. So I went to this weekend retreat, and then I went on a week-long missions conference, like very much like the one that you're in here now. And at the end of that week, I was challenged. Billy Graham was the keynote speaker for that missions conference, and he challenged us to stand and just, you know, let people see and say a prayer, commit your life if you're willing to go overseas. And I found that after that week, my heart had been drawn based on the different breakout sessions that I went to. All the breakout sessions that I went to were geared toward what they called at that time frontier missions, which is the unreached that we call today. And so at the end of the week, I stood up and said, yes, Lord, I want to go wherever you want me to go. But it seems to be that you want me to go somewhere where you have not been named yet. So that's how I got that's how I got my call to missions, as I call it. It was just basic discipleship, learning through teachers, through scripture, through just the leading of the Holy Spirit, that's where I was headed. But the other question that we want to address is, well, what did I expect? What did we expect when we first went overseas? What did I know about missions or expect it would be like? I had no idea. I did a little bit of research while I was in seminary, and I kept reading about people that went to like Mexico or Central America, and China. Those seemed to be the most popular stories that sort of came across my desk, as it were. And they all seemed to involve clown ministry or choir, you know, taking a choir group around, some kind of music ministry. And then I suppose that they would use those things to gather a group together, and then they would share their faith and hand out tracts and a Bible. That was kind of like what I thought maybe missions was going to be like. It changed when I learned more about going to the Muslim world, because you can't do those things overtly. So I really didn't know exactly what to expect. So when I got to the field, what I didn't take into consideration was just the day-to-day living. That I have to, you know, a missionary has to learn how to speak another language. Oh, and that's the other thing. I thought that I was just going to learn a language, and it was not going to be I knew it would be time-consuming, and I'd have to study at it, but what I hadn't counted on was that I would be a total language fail. I mean, I did learn the language, but it took me three times longer than it seemed to take everybody else, and it was like having a full-time job, and those are just things that I hadn't considered before, you know, I went, that you have to take it's different in different places, and not every place you go to you have to learn a language, but we were supposed to commit to 30 hours a week of language. It's pretty much almost a full-time job. And then I became a mother, so I had young kids. So then it was do language and raise a family, or try to do language while trying to be pregnant and deal with sickness and tiredness and all of those hormonal change that'll just make you just don't know You don't know if, I didn't know what I was experiencing was culture shock or was it the pregnancy, and it turns out it was probably both. So you've, what I was surprised at when I got to the mission field was just the day-to-day sort of, it's kind of like what Mandy said last night on the stage. She said she was, some things are just mundane. You get up, you clean yourself up, you go to get your groceries, and you know, in her case, she mentioned that she had a ministry already set up for her, but or you just go out and in our case, I had to go out and practice the language that I knew and get to know people and slowly share the gospel. Well, sharing the gospel was quite the challenge. I didn't expect how hard it was going to be. So the first time I tried to share my faith with someone that was a house helper that we had, I sat her down. We were very serious, and I shared with her outline of God, you know, how much God loves her, and we have this problem that He's perfect and we're sinful, and God came to earth as Jesus and died on the cross for us to take away our sins so that we could live eternally with God. Something very simple. And I was very serious, and all she could do was giggle and laugh, and I was like, oh no, what have I done? And I said, what's wrong? And she said, you're talking so seriously, and I know that you mean well, but you sound like a three-year-old. So it was just, it was a very humble, I didn't realize how humbling everything was going to be. And you're trying to learn how to shop and get your groceries and take care of yourself and your family. And everywhere you go, you run across an embarrassing language situation, or you don't understand a situation, and it gets frustrating. There's a lot of confusion. All the natural inclinations that you have about how to say hello, how to greet people, what hand do you use in order to offer somebody food? I mean, all those things, everything you do, you have to think about. It's not natural, and you have to learn it. I felt like a researcher most of the time. It never, ever felt romantic or like an adventure in that sense. It always just felt like I was constantly learning, constantly trying out new things, using what I was learning and evaluating if it had gone well, and, you know, start all over again. So my expectations, my expectations weren't met, but the positive things that I discovered was that I didn't have to start a clown ministry or a music ministry, and because I can't sing or be a clown. So that was, you know, those kinds of things were good surprises. I didn't expect that my children would enjoy the life that they had living in Central Asia, even though it wasn't anything at all like how Zane and I had grown up. They loved their life. They had a great time. And they were perfectly content with living in a different culture, learning a different language, being around all sorts of different nationalities. And so that was a nice surprise. I found that I learned how to adapt, even though things were different and not what I expected. But I learned that I could sit on the floor at my neighbor's house and learn how to make meat-filled tortellinis, which they make by the kilo, by the pound full, and store in their refrigerators for the winter, or store in their freezers for the winter. I could sit down on the floor next to my neighbor and make those with her, and I could, in my simplest language, I could tell her about my God, and I could find out about what she believed, and I could invite her into my home, and we could share life together. And it was way better than anything I expected.
Yeah, thanks, Catherine. Well, my name is Leanne Stiles, like I said before. My husband is Mac. We have three sons. I know one of them is here, Isaac, my son here. I don't know if Tristan is here or not. There you are. Oh, and my daughter-in-law, Emily, and my granddaughter, Anne. So they're all here. She's really cute.
And my daughter, Charlotte, is here as well.
Yeah. So our first foray into missions was going on short terms, and we directed short-term trips for about 12 years with university students, like many of you all. We'd go overseas for about 2 months in the summer. We went to Kenya for 5 summers. We went to Tunisia for 1 summer. And we went to Guatemala for about 4 summers and some other places in between. So I was really grateful for that because I think it gave us a broad view of kind of different stages of missions, different stages of gospel penetration. So in Kenya, the gospel was really on the move. Lots of people coming to Christ at that time, and we were able to join in with some solid Kenyan churches and join them in their evangelism and college ministries that were doing really exciting things. So yeah, coming alongside them. Our time in Tunisia was just the opposite, an unreached people group where very few had had any access to the gospel. And then finally in Guatemala, which was somewhere in between, particularly in the area that we were in, which was up in the north country, kind of the site of the civil war in the late 90s, early 90s, late 90s. So three very, very different experiences, three different ways of going. When we went to Kenya, we just kind of went in as normal Christian workers. We were known as that. And were swiftly taken into the church and into the Christian community, as I said. In Tunisia, we went in as English teachers. So we were paired up with English majors at the University of Tunis. And our students actually lived in Muslim homes, which was an incredible experience, a credible opportunity for them. In Guatemala, we went in mostly as aid workers. So we went into an area which was severely deprived, where the site of the Civil War, so there were many orphans, the economy was devastated, and so there were a lot of aid projects that were that we were able to join along, but also had many opportunities for evangelism going into some of the villages up in the mountains who, again, had little access to the gospel. So three really different experiences in that, for which I'm really grateful for. It was kind of at the end of, one of the last summers in Guatemala where I felt that the Lord was calling us into something long-term. And just a couple of weeks later, Matt came home and said, "Hey, you'll never believe this, but a guy has just asked us to go to the Persian Gulf and start university student ministry. Isn't that hysterical?" Because that was not on our map at all. But I just sensed that that's what the Lord had been preparing me for. And so I said, I'm ready to do that if you are. And we kind of went back and forth. Some days I would be really, "Yeah, let's do this." And then some days Mac would be, "Yeah, really, let's do this." But we'd kind of be at the opposite poles in that. But we did really feel in the end the confirmation of our call to go. So at the end of 2001, we packed up our 3 sons and our dog Frodo and moved to Dubai in the UAE. We were there for 15 years. The Lord did, in his kindness, amazing things while we were there. And, yeah, we can tell you lots of stories. My sons can share those with you, too. But a year and a half ago, we moved to northern Iraq, to where Mac became the pastor of an international church there in northern Iraq. So we've been there for a year and a half. Again, it's a totally different experience than any of the 4 places we've served in previously, but we're so grateful to be part of that. It's been a big privilege, and we're continuing to pray that the Lord would use us in that place as well.
Hey, Leanne. My son-in-law asked why Matt can talk so openly about where you all work, and we can't with other people. And I thought, I didn't know if maybe somebody else might have that same question.
Okay, well, it's interesting. In the part of Iraq where we are, there is religious freedom coming from the government. So actually, people, it's legal to convert when you're 18 or older. There's a historic Christian population in that area, and people are both Muslims and Christians are used to interacting with each other and to talk about issues of faith. So it's really open society. There are churches there that Kurdish churches there that are recognized by the government. And an international church that we're a part of that again is sanctioned by the government. So we're able to be open about what we're doing. Yeah. So how did I become interested in missions? Like Catherine, I didn't grow up knowing about missions. I too came to Christ when I was a junior in high school. And even though I was well discipled at that time, missions was not a part of that. I didn't hear about missions until I was in university. And it was at a missions conference like this that I was first confronted with the thought that I might be called into missions. And I have to tell you, it did not sound romantic to me at all. It sounded frightening and terribly difficult. But I knew that I loved Jesus, and I knew that I wanted his name lifted up, and I didn't want my life to be run by fear, but I wanted to live an obedient life, a life that was built on the rock of Jesus and not the shaky sand of fear. So I committed my life to go. I didn't know what that would look like or where it would take us. And if you told me at that time where we would end up, I simply would not have believed you. But I also was engaged to Mac at that time, and he had a call to go overseas. So it wasn't too long until we started directing the short-term projects and then eventually moved overseas. What was my view of missions and what missionaries did before I went to the field? The first missionary I met was Helen Rosevere. I don't know.
It's because of her that Zane got his call to missions.
Yeah. I don't know if you know who she was. She was a missionary to the Congo for decades. She was a medical missionary, and she faced incredible hardships and difficulties. She's written a couple of books that I would recommend. Give Me This Mountain, and He Gave Us a Valley. So an incredible story of faithfulness in through many, many difficult times. The second missionary that I met was Elizabeth Elliot. So many of you probably know that her husband was martyred in South America, and maybe that helps you understand a little bit about why I was frightened of missions. I guess I thought when I thought of missionaries, I thought you had to be super brave, super pious, an incredible evangelist and discipler, and that you faced great dangers every day. That was kind of my view. So when I finally got to the field, I met some normal missionaries who I discovered had strengths and weaknesses, who the Lord had gifted in different areas, some more than others, who had real struggles and real lives in some ways, not that Elizabeth Elliot and Helen Rosevere didn't. So that was really eye-opening to me, and the Lord used that to grow my faith and to grow a sense of his calling that perhaps he could use me as well. When we would come home from Dubai in the summers, people would over and over again ask me the question, what does a normal day look like for you? As if anyone ever has a normal day. But so I would begin to recite, okay, this is my normal day. And I'd look at them and I'd think, this is what your normal day looks like too. You know, I get up in the morning, I make breakfast for my family, I take my kids to school, I go maybe walk with a Christian friend and pray, I do a Bible study with a couple of women, I go to my son's sporting events. I have people over for dinner, either as an evangelistic outreach or a discipleship situation. So, kind of like yours. But I think the difference is, and Mandy said this so well last night, it's the people that I'm doing it with who, look really different and have so much less access to the gospel than people do here. So I think that was, those were the things that I saw as I got on the field, and some of my expectations that didn't pan out.
You mentioned one of your assignments was as an aid worker. Which country was that?
That was in Guatemala.
Guatemala, okay.
Yeah.
I want to mention that, and it's been said this week, so I don't want to, I'm not going to say too much about this, but the goal of missions, our goal of missions is to proclaim the gospel, make disciples, be involved with church, plant a church, gather our new disciples into church, and sort of like wash, rinse, repeat. You continue to do that cycle, putting in the DNA right at the very beginning that a disciple of Christ is someone who is going to make other disciples of Christ. And they will also gather people into churches, and they will plant in them a desire to reach out maybe beyond their culture. That's the same, like just like she was saying, that's what a day looks like here in the West. It's also what we want to be planting around the globe. The whole idea that we are engaging in evangelism, discipleship making, church activity, and missions. That's what you do here, and it's what you can become better at here before you get there. One of the things that I've reflected on in getting ready for this talk is that I wish that I had practiced more, been more intentional, felt more comfortable with my evangelism and discipleship making before I even got overseas, because there's so many, it's a little bit harder. If you already have your skill down that's going to accomplish the mission, then you're better able to handle all the frustrations of everything that's new and different when you cross cultures. But that's the goal of missions. If you decide that your goal of mission is to go and help the poor and the refugees and run a home where rescue traffic victims are being cared for, those are good things, but you may not be sharing the gospel. So you have to be sure that you understand that that is something that happens in the process of your doing evangelism and making disciples and being in church. If you're doing those things and you're an active member of a church, you're going to see the poor and be moved to want to help. And you're going to be modeling that for your new disciples or the new people that come into your church. If you make it your goal to just do aid work, you're not necessarily going to share the gospel. So we just wanted to make sure that that was clear. It's definitely, and you can't miss it. And what's happened, the things that you've heard this week, that church is at the center of where we're headed when we go overseas. And you'll find yourself with different ministries that you will engage in while you're there. And I don't have to repeat, because I think you've heard enough, that the goal of missions is to bring God glory, that he wants churches around the globe that will reflect his image and give him glory. Some people say, well, isn't everything missions? Well, or isn't everyone a missionary if they're engaged in sharing their faith? But just to make sure that we're all on the same page, we're talking about missionaries that cross cultural boundaries, that cross ethnic lands, you have to cross a significant barrier, and who don't have access to the gospel because of those barriers in order to present the gospel to them. So that's also, I want to make sure that we say that. That's what we're talking about when we say missionaries. Um, think we can, should we move on to, so Leanne, what do we do before we get there?
Okay, just a comment on what you were saying is, I know this kind of sounds hard to believe, but it's easy to lose sight of the goal of missions when you're in country, when you're actually there. Sadly, we see it happening among the majority, but among some missionaries, that they maybe get so into living cross-culturally that they forget to share the gospel, or they maybe think that they have to reach a certain level of cultural understanding before they can share the gospel, which, you know, we do encourage you to become culturally sensitive and to learn the culture, but it shouldn't stop you from sharing the gospel. Or they, like Catherine says, they maybe get into some line of work, or they consider themselves support people, and so they don't actively engage in sharing their faith. So it's important for us, even on the field, to continually remind each other of the goal of missions and what we're there for, which is to bring God's glory through preaching the gospel, through making disciples, and through forming churches, as Catherine said. Well, a question that we're often asked is, what can I do now? What should I be doing now as I think about going overseas? The first thing that both of us would say is that you need to start by being active in evangelism and disciple making here. Because if you're not doing it here, you're not going to suddenly get on an airplane and be a changed person once you get there. You've got to be evangelizing and making disciples here in the U.S. It's also a great training ground, as Catherine said, and learning to share your faith. Secondly, I would say get involved with international people. There's a lot of ways to do that. Maybe on your college campuses, there's probably international students. Maybe your church has an outreach to international students. Maybe you live in a neighborhood that has internationals. I know my in-laws, they lived on a street, and their next-door neighbors were from India on one side and from Russia on the other, and across the street was a Korean family. So your neighborhoods are coming more diverse and offer opportunities to reach out to internationals, particularly looking for internationals who are not from Christian backgrounds. Third, get involved in a healthy church. I think it's been said over and over again from the platform that if you haven't been involved in a healthy church here in the U.S., you won't have a vision, you won't have a model for what you want to plant when you go overseas. So get involved, really involved, in a healthy church. You know, membership, getting to know the leaders of the church, telling them about your desire to be overseas, receiving their counsel about that. A supportive church back home in the U.S. is an incredible asset for you when you're overseas. People who are praying for you, people who are behind you, people who know what you're doing, people who perhaps support you financially, is an incredible asset. So get involved now. And be actively involved and get to know your leaders. The last thing I would say is short-term trips to get your feet wet. They can be anywhere from a week to a couple of years, but that will give you a taste for life overseas and give you, I think, guidance as to where you might want to end up and what kind of work you might want to be doing overseas.
So once you get overseas, even before you get overseas, there's some things that you have to do to get ready to go. You have to know how you're going to get there. You have to have a visa. You have to have a reason to be in the country. And you heard Leanne say that she had different ways of being in the country, in different countries that they went to. We were never allowed to be in a country where we were known as Christians. It just varies around the globe. So you have to, first of all, figure out how you're going to get there. And there's so many ways to get overseas now. I mean, you can go as a professional. You can go as a medical doctor, nurse, a business person. You can go as a student studying abroad. There's so many, a variety of ways to go. You don't have to go just as a Bible student. In fact, we really encourage college students to get secular degrees as much as possible if you're going to go to an area that is a restricted country. It opens up a possibilities for getting jobs. You know, it's just your skill level, your ability to find a role in that society where it is, just it's just broadened if you're not stuck with just having a Bible degree. So I just thought I'd throw that out. That was a little freebie advice. So once you get there, once you've decided you've got your visa, you know how you're entering a country, then what happens day to day is, well, first of all, you have to set up your housing. And as you're setting up your housing, you're also starting doing language, and you're also researching the culture. You're finding out, well, how do they set up their houses? And what will make my house acceptable to them or welcoming to them? There are certain cultural cues until you've been there a while. You don't know them until you ask around and observe. Some cultural cues will say you are most welcome here. And there's other things that you might do that say you are not welcome here. And so you have to know how to set up your house in order to make sure that it's not just a little America or a little bit of Western life, that it looks enough to make your family comfortable, but also takes into account what makes visitors and guests into your home comfortable. So then you're learning how to shop. You're learning how to live. I thought, I wasn't much of a cook before I left to go overseas. I thought cooking from scratch meant that you go to the store and you buy a box of Duncan Hines brownies and you make your brownies, and that was cooking from scratch as opposed to just buying the brownies already made at the grocery store. I was very clueless. Thank goodness I brought with me a good cookbook. Back in the day, The Joy of Cooking was a very popular cookbook, and I brought that with me, and it came in very handy. Especially when I became pregnant and didn't like the smell of food, then Zane took the cookbook, because he was hungry, and he learned how to shop. I could shop. I didn't like the smell of the cooking food. I would go to the bazaars and come home with fresh tomatoes and dried noodles, and he learned how to make tomato sauce from scratch, literally from scratch, and cook noodles, and he could make chicken soup, and so he learned all sorts of things. But those are things that I had to learn when I first got there: how to eat, how to shop, how to cook from scratch, how to set up my house, and then there was all the language learning, which can happen in many different ways. You can have a class in a specialized school for language learning. You can have tutors. You can do it with you and some friends. You can do it with, if you're married, you can do it with your husband. You can set up language for your kids. I mean, there's all sorts of different ways that we did language throughout the years. And then you're also researching the culture all the time, asking questions. How do you do weddings? How do you do births? What are all the traditions around the life cycles? So part of being a missionary is being a research assistant or being an anthropologist and, you know, trying to figure out everything that you can about what's going on in the culture that you're not really aware of. So there's a lot of learning going on. At the same time, you're building relationships. You're meeting people. You're forming relationships in different levels, depending on what they are. One of the things that I would encourage you to do about something that you can do here is think through, we all kind of know how to make friends with each other, but you want to, one of the things that you have to do on the field is make friends with people you've never met before. And one of the lessons that I learned was to be intentional on the field about where I shopped and where I did my business, where I paid my bills and things like that, so that I went to the same tomato seller. I went to the same potato seller. I always went to the certain man that sold the best kinds of nuts. But I didn't just shop around. I always went to the same people. I was very intentional about having a shopping route, or if I was on an errand to go, I needed to buy some plates or dishes, I would just make sure that I went to the same people all the time to build those relationships. And I, you know, you can do that here in America too. If you've got daily business to do, don't just go random nilly-willy. You know, think, okay, is there an international person that works at a certain store? Maybe I can go shop at their store. Or maybe I can go shop at, even though it might be a little out of the way, I know that there's a whole group of international students that hang out on this part of campus. Maybe I can go and eat lunch over there. You know, just be intentional and think through strategically how you can put yourself in the path of those that are lost, and because that's what you're going to do on the field. So you're building relationships, making friends so that you can share the gospel. And at the same time that you're very much immersed on the field, Leanne alluded to the fact that you've got a church family, hopefully eventually on the field, but you've got one back home that sent you, and you need to communicate with them. So I learned, I'm not much of a writer, but I learned how to write prayer letters, and over the years refined how we did that, so it wasn't just one monotonous long, let me catch you up on everything that happened last week, but learned how to strategically write things and put in stories and bullet points to catch people's attention. There's a way to do that too, so that people can see what you're doing and know how to pray, very specifically can know how to pray for you. So you're very much engaged in where you are on the field, but also remembering to communicate back home, not just so they know what's happening, but so you they can be praying for you, because there's nothing that we do that we keep, that we don't do any of this without prayer support. God has sent us, and we know he's with us, but he wants to engage the church in being behind you and supporting you in what you do.
So the final topic we wanted to bring up is one that so many of you have pulled us aside in the hall to ask questions about, and that is whatever life stage that you're considering going overseas, whether that's single or whether that's married or whether that's married with kids. So let me just start with single, particularly single women, since you are the majority here in this room. The question is, should I consider going overseas if I'm a single woman? And I would say yes. The majority of people on the field are women, both married and single, but that obviously means that there are single women on the field too, since they're in the majority. But I think as a single woman, you have really unique opportunities that married women or men don't have, and that's 50% of the population are female. And many cultures, relationships between genders are not as normal or even not appropriate as they are here in the U.S. So you have a unique audience, and you may be the only person who can reach them. Also, growing numbers of children as percentages of populations, you also have many opportunities to reach out to children and to work with children. So lots of things, opportunities for you as a single woman. You often have more time to devote to ministry. And I've also seen on many occasions that families, local families, will adopt a single woman. And what an incredible thing that is, an opportunity to kind of be on the inside of a family and to be part of the family and to be able to share your life and the good news of Jesus Christ through that means. So, yeah, single women, please go. Please continue to go and be faithful in that. I think one of the big issues for single women is loneliness. And because of that, I think what I would advise you is to consider carefully before you go your team. If there is a team, if they would embrace you as a single and be aware and supportive of you as a single. And then if you're in an area where there is a church, that would be also an important thing to consider, either an expatriate church or maybe a local church that you can plug into and be a part of and have fellowship there. I think those are two of the things to consider for loneliness as a single person. Going as a married couple or married with kids, I think there's a number of issues that come up. Questions people ask us was, you know, are you going to take your kids with you? As if we had another option than to take them with us. You know, what's that going to do to their lives? How are they going to be educated? Are they going to turn out semi-normal? All those kinds of questions. I think other questions come up of how much time is appropriate to devote to your family versus devoting to ministry. All those kind of questions come up as families. And I'm not going to address each of those specifically, but you may ask questions during the Q&A time, or we can, Catherine and I will hang around a little bit afterwards, and we'll be happy to talk to you about that. Do you have anything to add?
The only thing I would add is, as singles, when you go out, a local family, I've known some of our singles have been adopted by a local family, and it's been a really neat situation. But you can also team. I didn't mention anything about team. A lot of your time is also taken up, not that sounds negative, but you're using some of your time to have team meetings and to talk about what's your strategy in the city and things like that, or wherever you are. But that's an important time for what I found for the singles to say, you know, I really need, like say somebody might come to me and say, Catherine, I need you to come with me. Maybe bring your kids because I want to go visit this family. And it just seemed, I think it would be more appropriate if I came with a wife and a mother. So you can team with the other women on your team to help you do things. You don't have to be a lone ranger. In fact, that's very much a Western philosophy. Most of the world thinks that you need to be a part of a community, a part of a family. Don't be a lone ranger. Know that you can use your team and you can use others to help in your ministry, as well as to help if you just need some family time with somebody and want someone else to cook you a meal, or you want to hang around with some kids. You know, don't isolate yourself. Be very much a part of the team that's there. So we are willing to answer questions, but we also wanted to bring up our children and have you listen to them for just a few minutes so they can give you a perspective on what it was like to be raised overseas. So Isaac and Charlotte will come up.
Okay. My name is Charlotte Spencer. I have lived in the States for almost 8 years now, but it was the first time I'd ever lived in the States when I moved here after high school. I was born on the field, so in a lot of ways I don't know any different. So talking about my experience is a little bit strange because I don't have a lot to compare it to. But I'm married to an American, and he's told me I'm really weird and pointed out the specific ways. So that's given me a little more insight. I think, like your life, I had really joyous times and really challenging times. The only things really that might have been different is just that it was really marked by transition. We lived in 5 different countries before I graduated from high school. And I loved every single one of them and had really great experiences in all of them, but it just changes who you are a little bit when you move that often. And even when we lived in Turkey for 7 years, and that was very stable, a lot of my friends would come and go. And so there's really people who are really dear to me that left and I've never seen them again. So that's just how it is. I don't know if that's a positive or a negative, but it does bring a new perspective. On the positive side, I mean, I did ballet, I rode horses, I was in school plays, I was really bad on the basketball team for a year. In elementary school, mom homeschooled my brother and I. In middle school and high school, I went to an international school. It was really small. A lot of other missionary kids were there. The hard things were, again, the transition, having to say goodbye a lot. There were a few traumatic incidences. Someone that we loved and were very close to, who was working in a more high-risk area, was kidnapped and killed when I was 14 years old, which is actually the best time of my faith I've ever had in my life. So that's just what I would want to highlight, is that I had the benefit of being raised in a home where the model is we obey Christ no matter what the cost. And where he says to go, we're going to go. And my parents took the command to disciple very seriously, and that started with us. And so my brother and I both came to know the Lord when we were each 8 years old. And as soon as the whole family believed, we were a team. And like my dad said last night on the panel, if he called them, he called us. And that's really how we both feel. And actually, my brother's planning on going overseas with Journeyman, hopefully within the next year. So, yeah, the Lord was really faithful to us, and I think really worked everything out for good in our lives. Now I live in Washington, D.C. I'm a nurse. I'm married. Nurses? Yeah. And, yeah, my husband and I would love to go overseas at some point in the future, and we're just doing life in church right now and figuring out what life's going to look like. So. And I go to Capitol Hill Baptist Church, so if any of you guys go there, come find me.
Hi, I'm Isaac Stiles. I'm Leanne and Max Stiles' youngest son. Was yay to the youngest. Let's go. I was born in Lexington, Kentucky. Grew up, as my mom mentioned, going on short-term mission trips. That was great. When I was 10, my parents decided to move to the Middle East, and I thought they were crazy. Why would you do that? I had a comfortable life as a 10-year-old. I liked my friends. I liked McDonald's. And what happened was 7 years of confusion, anger at my parents, and really anger at a God that would call them to go to a foreign land, go to a seemingly dangerous place. When the Lord started working in my heart, I read 1 Corinthians 15, where Paul talks about the gospel is of first importance. And that was a light bulb in my life to realize my parents, they actually believe this. And they actually want to see people come to faith to understand and know the gospel. And so when I was saved at the age of 17, all that anger, all the confusion that I had towards my parents, there was an immediate fruit in my life for a love of missions, a love to see people go, a love for my parents, for going, for making that sacrifice. So that's kind of my story. And just know that if you have kids and are considering going, or even in the future, if you consider going with kids, it can be hard. Those kids could be difficult, like I was. And yet, my parents' faithful ministry to share the gospel to unreached people groups had a profound impact on my life.
Do you guys want to stay up here? Shall we do questions? We've got 10 minutes,
yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, we've got about 10 minutes, so we have time for a few questions. Charlotte and Isaac might be able to answer some of your questions too, but.
Yep. Speak loudly.
So I had a question for Leanne. Did you go with an organization, or did you just feel the Lord go and you're like, yeah, let's pack up and move?
When we went to Dubai? Okay. We had to figure out a way to get there. The way we went in is my husband and our co-workers formed a company, and we targeted a company that would get us on university student campuses. Marketed supercomputers, which is old technology now, but by God's grace, that enabled us to get on campus through the installation of supercomputers on first one campus and then some of the others. So, yeah, we had to figure out our own way to get there. We did have support from a student mission movement here. InterVarsity was our kind of sending agency, and they, we did raise support through them. Our business was not, well, we weren't good enough business people to support ourselves through that, so we also raised funds.
You might have heard us say last night that Zane and I had decided that we weren't going to date someone that wasn't already called to missions, because we knew that that was where we were going. We knew that, you know, we were going overseas, so it just made sense to continue, you know, to marry somebody. But I don't know that I can. Do you have another answer to that?
Well, it's certainly a question you need to decide before you get more involved in the relationship. I don't know what stage your relationship is, but like Catherine said, I think if the Lord is calling you into missions, you should give great consideration to that, whether the relationship should continue. I mean, obviously the Lord changes hearts, and the guy that you're interested with may become interested in missions, but until that happens, I would urge caution in continuing the relationship. I know that might be a hard statement to make, but yeah, should be considered.
Bear in mind that marriage is a good thing, and it does glorify God, but it's not commanded. In fact, we see a pretty clear push toward remaining single if you can. And if you already feel like you need to be obedient to the Lord by going into missions, then, like she said, I would be really cautious about choosing marriage over that. I think the Lord will bless your obedience, and that might mean marriage. It might not, but he's promised that he'll be faithful regardless, and he'll sustain you regardless. So. My mom gives great hugs.
If you didn't hear the question, she was, if I restate this incorrectly, then let me know. She's very much a physical touch, huggy person and loves her family and loves giving hugs. How would she adapt to living overseas where that's not necessarily the love language there? I'll put it that way. Is that? Oh, yeah. Well, I'll just repeat what Leanne said, is you need to be a part of a local church if there is one. And if you have a team, you know, definitely be doing fellowship with your team. And sometimes your team is your church. So in terms of getting spiritual support and a community that loves and cares for you, you kind of have to help. You have to create that. The other issue is, depending on what culture you're in, you have to learn all the cultural things that you can't necessarily go up to someone and hug them. I mean, it was years before, maybe years is an exaggeration, it was a long time before I could come home in America and look a man in the eye, or even, you know, everyone here in America is very huggy, and so these men would come up to hug me, and I have not hugged a man other than my husband for, you know, years, and trying to get used to that so it's not allowed in some cultures. So you just have to be very cautious and careful, and you learn different ways to express your affection for one another in different cultures, just see what they do. But for the loneliness, God is always with you. And I don't mean for that to sound trite. I mean, he is your sustainer and your father, and he loves you. And you have to grow in your relationship here and be confident before you go that you know who you are in Christ. And I don't know what else to say to that, really. Yeah, and that's the other thing. Your team on the field, it becomes your family. To Charlotte, this is Aunt Leanne. And, you know, she's got aunts and uncles that we're not blood related to at all. And all the people know each other. You just become family for one another.
That's true.
Yeah. One more right here, I think. Go ahead. So the question was, how do you talk when you're just learning the language? How can you share your faith? So you start with your person that's teaching you language, and you ask them to give you the words that you need to tell a very simple testimony of who you are, an introduction. This is who I am. I'm a follower of Christ. You know, I'm an American. You know, this was my job, blah, blah, blah. You know, just in the midst of learning how to do a general introduction, right away from the very beginning, you learn or ask someone to teach you how to say, and whatever the right way to say it is in that culture, that you are a follower of Jesus. So you can start there. And you just learn. GLUE is this acronym that says, for language learners, it says, get what you need, learn whatever it is you just got. So get it, learn it, use it, and then you evaluate it. So you get it. You get the words that you need to express, how to share the gospel. So you start with simple introductions, and then you ask your tutor to teach you maybe you'll pick a verse that you want to learn, and if they have the Bible in that language, and you say, teach me how to say this verse. So you start simply, slow.
Well, thank you very much for coming. Catherine and I will hang around. Charlotte and Isaac might hang around too. If you have any questions, we'll be up front. Thank you very much.